every C-suite dashboard in the world is, well, they're lying to you. I mean, if you are using a single metric like a net promoter score or a brand sentiment index, or even just one of those standard 1 to 10 tracking grades to measure your brand's position in the market, you are mathematically erasing roughly 88% of your company's identity.
Right. It's just gone.
Literally gone. You are making multi-million dollar resource allocation decisions based on a statistical ghost. And, you know, I am looking around our studio right now, and to explain exactly why your dashboards are broken, the backdrop here has completely transformed.
It's quite the setup today.
It really is. We have these heavy, ancient-looking academic bookshelves on one side, but they're sort of bleeding into these intricate, almost glowing star charts. And floating right in the middle of the room are these high-dimensional geometric projections, these glowing, curved manifolds, mapping out something called the E8 lattice. It basically looks like a theoretical physics lab in here.
Well, we needed the right environment for this.
Definitely. And you, my friend, have been aggressively scribbling detailed stochastic equations and like highlighting notes on your pad for the last hour to prepare for this.
Yeah, because the math we are dealing with today demands absolute precision. It is unforgiving, it does not care about marketing platitudes, and it fundamentally rewrites how we understand the competitive space we are operating in.
So, to you listening, we are not doing a typical marketing discussion today. We are not talking about, you know, brand purpose or logo colors in that abstract, qualitative way you might be used to.
No, not at all.
We are embarking on a rigorous mathematical exploration of spectral brand theory, or SBT. Our mission for this deep dive is to completely replace qualitative brand guessing with geometric and physical theorems.
Exactly.
We are taking the guesswork out and replacing it with topology, dimensionality reduction, and stochastic diffusion. Okay, let's unpack this.
The Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma is not a business theorem. It is a foundational result in dimensionality reduction. And it proves unconditionally that projecting 8 dimensions to one number requires distortion exceeding 152% for as few as 10 brands. Every single number brand metric in use today violates this bound. That is the starting point for this lecture.
Okay, wow. That is a staggering claim to just drop right out of the gate.
It's the mathematical reality.
We are literally starting by breaking the fundamental tool every executive uses to measure their entire brand strategy. I mean, it's wild. So how are we navigating this landscape today? What's the roadmap?
5 mathematical results and their practical implications. The unique metric on brand perception space and why Euclidean geometry is the wrong tool. Spectral metamerism and the kernel of invisible information. Sphere packing and the finite capacity of a market. Concentration of measure and why fuzzy cohort boundaries are geometric, not statistical. Non-ergodic dynamics and why sequence produces results that averaging cannot recover.
Okay, let's start with that first concept. The literal shape of the universe we are operating in. Because to understand how brands move or how they relate to each other and how consumers perceive them, we first have to define the shape of the space they exist in, right?
Precisely.
Yeah.
If you get the space wrong, everything else is invalid.
It's like, okay, if I want to calculate a flight path from New York to Tokyo and I use a flat map instead of a globe, I am going to crash.
Yes.
Because the shortest distance on a flat map looks like a straight line across the Pacific, but in reality, on a curved Earth, you fly up over the North Pole.
Mm.
If you use the wrong map, your distances are completely structurally wrong.
That flight path analogy perfectly captures the crisis in modern market research.
Yeah.
Almost the entire industry is flying planes into mountains.
Flying planes into mountains. I love that.
It's true, though. Because they are using Euclidean geometry, you know, flat math,
mm-hmm.
to measure a space that is fundamentally curved. In spectral brand theory, brand perception does not live in a flat coordinate system. It is a warp product of 2 entirely separate curved manifolds. We have to look at the signal being emitted and the observer receiving it.
Okay, let's break those 2 manifolds down so the listener can actually visualize this. First, we have the brand signal space.
Correct.
So in SBT, a brand isn't a single monolithic idea, right? It's an emitter of signals across 8 distinct dimensions. Let me list them. Semiotic, narrative, ideological, experiential, social, economic, cultural, and temporal.
Those are the 8, yes.
And these signals exist in what the paper calls Math BA 8x8, which is the positive orthant of 8-dimensional space. To put that simply, you can't have negative signal emission.
Right, exactly.
Like, you can have 0 signal on a dimension, but you can't have a -3 visual identity. That just doesn't make sense.
And restricting the space to strictly positive values changes the underlying math entirely. In this positive orthant, Euclidean distance just fails us. Well, think about how human perception actually works. If you move a brand signal strength from, say, a 1 to a 2 on a 10-point scale, that is a 100% increase in signal intensity.
Right, it doubles.
Exactly. The consumer feels a massive difference there. But if you move it from an 8 to a 9, it's only a 12.5% increase. It barely registers psychologically.
Oh, I see.
But Euclidean math, which just calculates simple flat differences, treats both of those moves as a distance of exactly 1. It completely ignores the compositional, ratio-based reality of human perception.
It's like turning the volume on your stereo from 1 to 2, which seems like a huge jump, versus turning it from 8 to 9, where you almost can't hear the difference because it's already blasting.
Yes, perfect analogy.
And that's why we measure sound in decibels, which are logarithmic, so we need a logarithmic metric here too.
Exactly. That underlying logarithmic reality is why we must use the Aitchison metric for the brand signal space.
The Aitchison metric.
Right. It uses logarithmic ratios to capture the true relative distances between brand signals. It respects the fact that brand profiles are proportional. A brand's identity is defined not by absolute scores, but by the ratios between its dimensions.
Meaning, like, how its experiential signal compares to its economic signal?
Precisely. It's the balance of those ingredients that defines the brand in that space.
Okay, so that's the brand side of the equation. But, I mean, a brand emitting a signal in an empty forest makes no sound.
Right, it requires an observer.
Exactly. Which brings us to the second curved manifold we mentioned. The observer weight space.
Yes, the observers, the target consumer cohorts. They do not value all signals equally.
Of course not.
They assign different levels of salience or weight to those 8 dimensions. Some care deeply about the economic and experiential meaning, price and convenience.
Like someone just wanting a cheap, fast cup of coffee.
Exactly. While others care passionately about the ideological and cultural footprint of the company. Now, here's the crucial mathematical constraint. These cognitive weights must sum to 1.0.
Sum to 1.0, meaning 100%.
Yes, which means they live on a probability simplex, mathematically denoted as delta 72.
Hold on, let's build an explain like I'm 5 mental model for the listener on this probability simplex, because that sounds intense.
Sure.
If a 2D simplex is just a triangle where all points sum to 100%, and a 3D simplex is like a solid pyramid, what does a 7-dimensional simplex actually represent for a consumer's brain? Are we saying they have a strictly finite pie of attention to slice up?
That is exactly what we're saying. Cognitive capacity is a zero-sum game.
Interesting.
If an observer allocates 40% of their perceptual weight to evaluating your price, the economic dimension, they mathematically only have 60% left to divide among the other 7 dimensions.
It's because the brain just can't focus on everything at once.
Right. They cannot care 100% about price and 100% about your heritage and 100% about your sustainability. It's biologically and mathematically impossible. The simplex represents that rigid boundary of human attention.
Okay, that makes total sense. And to measure distance between 2 different consumers on this simplex, we don't use the Aitchison metric anymore, right?
Oh, we switch tools.
We use the Fisher-Rao metric. Mm. Now, I know from looking at the literature survey, there are like a dozen ways to measure the distance between probability distributions.
Oh, easily.
You've got Hellinger distance, the Kullback-Leibler divergence, Jensen-Shannon. But the R1 paper is completely emphatic that Fisher-Rao is the only valid choice. I mean, why? Explain the mechanics of why it has to be Fisher-Rao.
The justification for that rests on Senkov's theorem, which is a foundational mathematical result from 1972.
Okay.
Senkov proved that the Fisher-Rao metric is the unique Riemannian metric invariant to sufficient statistics.
Invariant to sufficient statistics. What does that mean in practice?
Think about what happens when a company restructures its data. Let's say a marketing team decides to simplify their taxonomy, and they just merge the social and cultural dimensions into a single bucket for their quarterly report.
Happens all the time.
Exactly. If you use any other distance metric besides Fisher-Rao, the geometric distance between 2 distinct consumer cohorts will arbitrarily stretch or shrink just because you change your spreadsheet columns.
Wait, really? So the map warps just because you changed the legend?
Yes.
That's a disaster. You'd be making decisions based on a totally fabricated shift in the market.
It is a systemic failure.
Yeah.
But Fisher-Rao prevents it. Because it is invariant, refining or coarse-graining your dimensional categories preserves the underlying geometric truth. The structure of the market remains perfectly stable regardless of how the analyst groups the data.
Wow.
There is literally no other consistent mathematical choice.
So when we combine these 2 manifolds, the brand signals measured by Aitchison and the observer's finite attention weights measured by Fischer-Rau, we get what you called a warped product metric, meaning the observer's specific cognitive weighting actually distorts the geometry of the brand space itself. Like, two brands might look incredibly similar to an observer who heavily weights the experiential dimension, but they look mathematically unreachable from each other to an observer who heavily weights the ideological dimension.
Yes. Your brand regression assumes flat space. Brand perception lives on a curved manifold. The assumption is hiding the structure. Every traditional brand tracking study that computes simple averages or calculates standard deviations or plots Euclidean differences on an XY-axis is generating structurally false distances.
Because they're using flat math on a curved universe.
Exactly. They might report that brand A and brand B are moving closer together to capture the same demographic, when mathematically on the curved manifold, they're accelerating further apart.
I have to push back here, though. I mean, I understand the math. The theory is airtight. But wait, the Fischer-Rau metric requires estimating distributions over observer weights, meaning individual-level survey responses, not aggregated scores. What is the minimum viable experimental design to estimate this empirically? I mean, is there a practical approximation a manager listening to this can use right now without having to rebuild their entire data infrastructure from scratch?
It's a very fair question, and the critique is valid. But the math demands a shift in data collection.
So you can't fake it?
No. You cannot take the average of survey scores across 1,000 people and then apply Fischer-Rau. You have to measure the individuals first and compute the geometry on their specific distributions.
Okay, so what's the minimum viable setup?
The minimum viable experimental design requires tools like maximum difference scaling or choice-based conjoint analysis.
Right, forcing them to choose.
Exactly. You must force individuals to make trade-offs between the 8 dimensions. If you just ask them to rate things 1 to 10 on a Likert scale, everyone will say that high quality, low price, and great service are all a 10.
Because if everything is important, nothing is important.
Precisely. You force the trade-off to reveal the true cognitive weight summing to 1.0.
But what if they don't have that conjoint data yet? What's the stopgap?
As a practical approximation, until a manager secures that forced trade-off data, they can use Dirichlet distributions to model prior assumptions about their consumer cohorts.
Dirichlet distributions.
Yes. A Dirichlet distribution allows you to model probabilities of probabilities, giving you a mathematically sound way to estimate the simplex space. But the immediate, non-negotiable step is that managers must stop using simple arithmetic averages to make decisions.
Stop averaging. That is the perfect transition to our next major theme. Because if flattening the math is bad, compressing the dimensions is infinitely worse. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, it does.
We've established that the tree brand space is 8-dimensional and heavily curved. But let's look at reality, right? The entire corporate world operates on single numbers. The net promoter score, the customer satisfaction index. What actually happens mathematically when we take that massive 8-dimensional complexity and crush it down into a single scalar grade?
Catastrophic information loss. And I am using catastrophic in the literal mathematical sense.
Yeah, I heard you were.
This brings us back to the Johnson-Linnan-Strauss lemma, or JL lemma, which dictates the fundamental limits of dimensionality reduction. The theorem proves that if you try to project 8 dimensions down to 1 dimension, and you want to preserve the relative distances between just 10 competing brands, the mathematical distortion required exceeds
152%. 152% distortion just for 10 brands. And what if you're a global enterprise looking at a broader competitive set of, say, 50 brands?
Then the distortion exceeds 198%.
Almost 200% error.
Exactly. The single number score can inflate the distance between two brands by nearly 3 times, or it can erase the distance entirely, placing a premium luxury brand and a discount commodity at the exact same coordinate on a spreadsheet.
Let's give that some weight, because that is terrifying for C-suites who tie their compensation, their bonuses, and their entire resource allocation to a single number dashboard.
They are flying blind.
We are taking a space that requires roughly 20 bits of information to describe accurately across the 8 dimensions, and a standard 5-point grading scale, like a basic satisfaction survey, captures at best 2.32 bits of information.
Yes, the math on that is brutal.
We are literally throwing away 88.4% of the brand's identity into what the paper calls a 7-dimensional null space. Explain the mechanics of this null space.
Think of the null space as the kernel of invisible information. When you project a 3-dimensional object, like a cylinder, onto a 2-dimensional wall, it casts a shadow.
Okay, I'm visualizing that.
Depending on the angle, the shadow might look like a perfect circle, or it might look like a rectangle. The null space contains all the depth that was lost in that shadow.
Wow, that's a great way to picture it.
In brand perception, mapping 8 dimensions down to 1 dimension creates a massive 7-dimensional shadow where the vast majority of your brand's unique attributes are completely hidden from the observer who is just reading the report.
And this hidden data introduces a phenomenon that SBT borrows from physics, spectral metamerism.
Yes.
Let's use an ELI-5 analogy here for the listeners. In color science, metamers are 2 physically different light spectra that happen to produce the exact same color percept in the human eye.
Right.
Why? Because our eyes only project massive spectral complexity through 3 tiny receptors, our cones, the biology physically compresses the data.
Now take that color analogy one step further into brand space. You can buy 2 fabrics that look perfectly matched inside a department store under fluorescent light.
Yeah, you think you've got a perfect outfit.
But the second you walk outside into natural sunlight, they clash completely.
Oh, I've done that. It's the worst.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they were never the same color to begin with. The lighting environment, combined with your eye's biological compression, hid the difference. In spectral brand theory, 2 brands with entirely different 8-dimensional structures, which we call their level 1 spectral output, can project to the exact same scalar grade their level 2 rendered output.
So the grade on the dashboard is the same color.
Yeah.
But the underlying brand architectures are completely different light sources entirely.
Exactly.
Let's use the case study from the R2 paper to make this concrete for the listener. Look at Hermes.
A fascinating example.
Right. In the SBT framework, Hermes is widely considered an A-plus brand. They possess immense ecosystem coherence. They are incredibly strong on the experiential dimension, the temporal dimension, meaning their deep historical heritage, and the semiotic dimension, which is their iconic visual identity.
Very high signals there.
But they are intentionally very low on the economic dimension, meaning they are exclusionary, not accessible. You can't just walk in off the street and buy a Birkin bag.
No, they make it very difficult. Now, construct a metameric pair for Hermes. Imagine a hypothetical brand Y. Brand Y scores a 9.5 out of 10 on the ideological dimension and the economic dimension.
Okay.
They are hyper-accessible, mass market, and highly activist in their social stance. But they completely flatline on heritage, on narrative, and on experiential exclusivity.
Total opposite of Hermes.
Yes. But if a brand manager uses a standard unweighted average to create a composite brand health score, the math dictates that Hermes and brand Y could yield the exact same numerical average of, say, 7.8 out of 10.
Same exact score. Radically different architecture.
Completely different.
If you are an executive or an investor looking at a dashboard, you think Hermes and brand Y are peers. You think they are the same color?
And that is a fatal error.
Because if you acquire brand Y and try to manage it using the Hermes playbook, like cutting accessibility to increase exclusivity, you will instantly bankrupt the company. Because you've destroyed the only dimensions actually carrying the weight for that specific brand. This is the difference between rasterized and vectorized management.
Yes, that distinction is vital.
Human brains naturally tend to rasterize information, like saving a high-resolution vector file as a low-res pixelated JPEG. It's lossy. We compress the 8 dimensions into a simple narrative. We are a premium brand. But brands must be managed as full 8-dimensional vectors, vectorized as a single source of truth.
Because the rasterization problem is the root cause of almost all organizational friction.
Oh, absolutely.
When a CEO says we are an A-tier brand, the design team reconstructs the 7 missing dimensions of that null space one way, prioritizing aesthetics.
Right.
And then the product team reconstructs those same missing dimensions another way, prioritizing features. They are both logically consistent with the A-tier grade they were given, but totally inconsistent with each other.
So they end up fighting in meetings because they are projecting different invisible dimensions.
Exactly. The Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma is not a data quality problem. It is a theorem. No survey redesign can fix it.
You cannot survey your way out of a mathematical law. It's just gravity at that point.
Precisely.
Okay, so we've mapped out this massive 8-dimensional universe. We know the space is curved. We know that compressing it into a single number creates catastrophic 152% distortion. So let's ask a physical question. Exactly how many brands can fit inside this 8-dimensional universe before it's full?
The capacity problem.
Yeah, before you just become a commodity bumping into your competitors.
To answer that, we turn to one of the most beautiful and complex objects in higher mathematics. the E8 lattice.
The floating projections we have behind us right now.
Exactly those. Finding the densest possible way to pack spheres in 8 dimensions was a problem that went unsolved for centuries. It wasn't until Marina Vyazovska's breakthrough in 2016 that the E8 lattice was definitively proven to be the optimal packing structure.
And she won the Fields Medal for that, right?
She won the Fields Medal for this exact proof, yes.
Let's translate this sphere packing math into market strategy. Why do we care about packing spheres? Well, think of a grocer stacking oranges. You want to fit as many oranges into the crate as possible without crushing them. In brand space, an orange, or a sphere, represents the perceptual territory a brand occupies.
Exactly.
If another brand gets inside your sphere, consumers can no longer tell you apart. The boundaries overlap, you become commodities competing purely on price. And the radius of this sphere is defined by human psychology, something called the just noticeable difference, or JND.
The empirical threshold for a just noticeable difference in a normalized brand space is roughly 0.5 units per dimension, which equates to about 10% of the usable scale.
Okay, 10% chunks.
Right. Using this radius, combined with the extreme packing efficiency of the E8 lattice, we can calculate the theoretical capacity of a market. And the resulting number fundamentally destroys the concept of a saturated market.
I love this part.
The capacity is bounded at a massive 188.18 that is $100 million distinct, mathematically distinguishable brand positions.
100 million. I mean, whenever a strategist sits in a boardroom and groans, oh, the market is too crowded, we have to compete on price, they are mathematically wrong. 99.99% of brand space is totally empty. The crowded market is a myth.
It is an illusion created by what we call a dimensionality trap.
A dimensionality trap.
Yes. Markets only feel crowded because brands act like lemmings and arbitrarily restrict themselves to a low-dimensional subspace.
Like everyone just copying each other.
Exactly. Imagine an entire industry, like commercial airlines, for instance, that almost exclusively competes on the economic axis, meaning ticket price, and the experiential axis, meaning legroom or direct flights.
Yeah, that's literally every airline app.
Right. They ignore the semiotic, ideological, and narrative dimensions almost entirely.
They are playing a two-dimensional game in an eight-dimensional arena. And when that happens, when dimensions are highly correlated, say, with an average correlation coefficient of 0.3 across the industry, the effective dimensionality of the space collapses.
It collapses significantly.
It drops from 8 dimensions down to roughly 2.6 dimensions. And when the math collapses to 2.60, the market capacity plummets from 100 million positions to just 1,000.
Yes.
That's why it feels crowded. You chose to fight in a phone booth when you had an entire stadium available.
Precisely. And the E8 lattice also allows us to analyze local competitive structure with incredible precision. In 8 dimensions, the kissing number, which is the maximum number of non-overlapping spheres that can simultaneously touch a central sphere, is exactly 240.
240.
Yes. This means any single brand position has at most 240 nearest competitor positions before the geometry forces someone out of that neighborhood.
240 brand positions per neighborhood. Real markets use fewer than 20. The spectral space is not crowded.
Not even close.
And the math breaks these 240 neighbors down beautifully, too. 112 of those slots are specialists that differ from you sharply on exactly 2 dimensions. The other 128 slots are generalists that differ from you slightly across all 8 dimensions.
That's the exact geometric breakdown, yes.
But I have to ask a hard technical question here. Direct pushback on the physics of this.
Okay.
The E8 lattice is the densest known packing in 8 dimensions. But is it the right packing structure for brand perception space, where the dimensions are not orthogonal and the geometry, as we established earlier, is Riemannian rather than Euclidean? Does the 240 neighbor bound still hold under the Aitchison metric?
That is a highly sophisticated challenge.
I try.
And you are correct that the E8 lattice is optimal in flat Euclidean space. And we already proved brand space under the Aitchison metric is curved.
Right, the flight path analogy.
However, the centered log ratio transform maps the positive orthon isometrically into a hyperplane where the Aitchison metric actually becomes Euclidean.
Oh, so you can flatten it mathematically without losing the ratio data.
Exactly. Yeah. In that transform space, the E8 tacking bounds apply directly. Now, when we introduced the observer weights from the simplex, that warped product metric, we talked about the spheres stretch and become ellipsoids.
Like squished oranges.
Yes. E8 is no longer perfectly optimal for arbitrary ellipsoids, but the order of magnitude remains exactly right.
So the math doesn't totally break?
No, the structural lesson holds unconditionally. The capacity of human perception is massive, and local market neighborhoods are vastly underpopulated.
Fascinating. So the white space is undeniably there. Companies just aren't using the other dimensions to find it.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've mapped the universe. We know 100 million brands can fit inside it. But a map is useless without a navigator. How do the actual consumers, the observers looking at these brands, fit into this geometry? Because in traditional marketing, you define a cohort by demographics. Millennials who earn over 70K live in urban centers and buy organic. It's a rigid box.
And geometrically, that rigid box is a total hallucination.
Hallucination.
It really is.
Yeah.
We have to look at how observer profiles, those cognitive dimensional weights we discussed on the simplex, are actually distributed on the probability simplex delta 75 hours. When we analyze this using Levy's lemma, which deals with the concentration of measure on high-dimensional spheres, we find a reality that is completely counterintuitive to human instinct.
Right, because in high dimensions, geometry gets weird. Let's ELI-5 Levy's lemma for a second. Think of a high-dimensional orange.
A classic topological example.
If you have a normal 3D orange, the edible fruit takes up most of the volume, and the peel is just a thin layer on the outside. But as you add more and more dimensions to the orange, the math shifts. By the time you get to 8 dimensions or higher, almost all the volume of the orange is contained entirely in the peel.
Yes.
The center is virtually empty. Almost all the mass pushes out toward the equator.
That phenomenon is the concentration of measure. If you pick 2 random observer profiles in this space, you might logically expect their distances to be evenly distributed. Some close together, some far apart.
Just random scatter.
Right. But Levy's lemma proves that because of the high-dimensional geometry, the expected squared Euclidean distance between uniformly random observer profiles concentrates very tightly around a specific value, the square root of 7 over 36, which is approximately 0.44.
So everything is pushed far apart, but everything is equally far apart from everything else.
Exactly. Because of this high-dimensional concentration, cohort boundaries are inherently fuzzy. You cannot draw a sharp, definitive line around a group of people. The paper mathematically calculates that 57% of the entire simplex lies near a boundary zone.
57%.
Yes. Cohorts are geometric spaces, not statistical bins.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Imagine trying to draw rigid national borders on a map of moving clouds.
That's exactly what demographic segmentation is trying to do.
You can't put consumers in rigid demographic boxes because their spectral weightings, like how much they care about the ideological versus the narrative versus the economic dimensions, naturally blur at the edges. If 57% of your target audience is sitting in a boundary zone, targeting them with a binary, you are in this segment or you aren't. Messaging strategy is just going to fail.
It will fail completely.
You have to design signal architectures that account for that massive overlap.
Because understanding the continuous geometric nature of human perception is vastly superior to discrete demographic sorting. Demographics tell you what someone looks like. Geometry tells you how they perceive value.
Which brings us to the final and perhaps most dynamic piece of the puzzle today. Everything we've discussed so far, the curved geometry, the monomerism, the E8 sphere packing, is a snapshot. It's static.
It's a single moment in time.
But brands move through time, and the physics of how brand perception changes over time is fundamentally non-ergodic.
Yes, non-ergodicity is key here. Ergodicity is a concept borrowed from statistical mechanics and thermodynamics.
Okay, lay it on us.
A process is considered ergodic if its time average equals its ensemble average, meaning it mathematically does not matter if you observe one person over 100 days or 100 people on one single day. The average outcome is identical.
But brand perception isn't like that.
Not at all. Brand perception fails this test completely. It is modeled as a stochastic diffusion process on a manifold, and the mathematics explicitly prove it is non-ergodic.
Let's use the classic coin toss game from ergodicity economics to explain the mechanism here, because this can be tricky to wrap your head around.
It's a great illustration.
Imagine a game where if you flip heads, you increase your wealth by 50%, but tails, you lose 40%. If 100 people play this game once, which is the ensemble average, the math says the group makes money.
On average, the collective comes out ahead.
But if one person plays that exact same game 100 times in a row, the time average, their wealth eventually hits a bad streak, the losses compound, and they go bankrupt almost every single time.
Yes, the path dependency destroys them.
Because the process is multiplicative, not additive, sequence matters. If an observer receives a positive brand signal, say, a multiplier of 1.1 followed by a negative signal of 0.8, the arithmetic result is 0.88. But if the sequence reverses, the negative signal fundamentally alters the weight the observer assigns to future signals. A negative prior acts as a filter. It limits the absorption of the positive signal.
That sequence dependence is the crucial mechanism, and it leads directly to the concept of absorbing boundaries.
Absorbing boundaries.
In the stochastic differential equation, the SDE that models how perception evolves, if an observer's conviction on a critical dimension drops below a certain threshold, which is approximately 2.0 out of 10, they hit an absorbing boundary.
They step off a cliff, mathematically speaking.
The perception crystallizes into a permanent prior. Once that boundary is hit, the observer's capacity to perceive that dimension is locked. They are completely absorbed.
So they just stop listening.
Emitting new positive signals on that dimension does absolutely nothing because the observer's spectral profile no longer processes them. The diffusion coefficient at that boundary has vanished.
The R6 paper provides a very stark empirical case study of this, Tesla's ideological dimension. And I want to be incredibly clear to our listeners, we are taking absolutely no political stance here. We are analyzing this strictly as a geometric variable reaching a limit.
As we must.
For a specific consumer cohort identified as the progressive boycotter, Tesla's ideological dimension has dropped below that 2.0 threshold. It has crossed into the absorbing region.
And from a mathematical and structural perspective, the specific content of the ideology is completely irrelevant. What matters is the geometry of the conviction.
Right.
Because this cohort has reached an absorbing state, Tesla emitting correction signals like, say, launching a massive new PR campaign highlighting their sustainability metrics or their solar initiatives is functionally useless.
Because the boundary is absorbed.
Normal signal recovery is mathematically impossible.
Right.
Sequence matters. Recovery from reputation damage is not symmetric with the damage.
Say that again, because that is the entire point.
Recovery from reputation damage is not symmetric with the damage. Non-ergodicity is not a modeling choice. It is the structure of the problem. Mm-hmm. If you want to fix an absorbed boundary, you can't just send positive signals. You require what SBT calls a forced recollapse of the entire spectral profile.
Yes, a forced recollapse.
You have to destroy the existing perception cloud entirely and rebuild it from scratch, usually by radically altering the semiotic identity, like changing the name, the logo, the visual gate, so the observer's brain doesn't recognize the old prior and block the signal.
Exactly.
But I have to play devil's advocate here. You claim non-ergodicity empirically by showing sequence dependence.
Yes.
But can't sequence dependence be explained by simpler mechanisms like basic Bayesian updating with an incredibly strong prior without invoking high-level non-ergodic diffusion? I mean, what distinguishes the non-ergodic mechanism from a simple Bayesian learning model that a normal analyst would use?
A standard Bayesian model updates continuously. No matter how strong the negative prior is, a sufficient sequence of contradictory positive evidence will eventually pull the posterior distribution back toward the center.
You can slowly dig yourself out of the hole.
Yes. The mathematical weight shifts, but it never fundamentally locks. The non-ergodic diffusion model in SBT features true absorbing boundaries at the limits of the positive orthant.
Mm.
When the signal strength $6 approaches zero, the diffusion coefficient vanishes entirely. It is mathematically impossible to exit that state through standard updating. Bayesian models can approximate stubbornness, but the SDE on the 7-sphere captures the true irreversibility, the topological reality that a dimension of brand perception has literally ceased to exist for that observer.
It's the difference between a heavy door being hard to push open and the door being bricked over entirely.
The architecture itself has changed.
Wow. Okay. We have covered an immense amount of ground today. Let's summarize the mission we set out on at the beginning. Marketing is no longer an art of guessing or reading tea leaves.
Far from it.
We have shown that brand perception is governed by strict mathematical laws, geometric bounds, warped distances, sphere packing capacities, and irreversible non-ergodic states. Understanding the curvature and capacity of these eight dimensions is the only way to navigate a market without relying on distorted, rasterized metrics that throw away 88% of your data.
If you are making resource allocation decisions based on a single scalar grade, you're flying blind in a curved space, projecting shadows and hoping they resemble reality.
Which leads me to a final provocative thought to leave you with. It comes from the R7 paper on demand-driven investment. It introduces a concept called the alignment gap.
This is crucial for founders.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you are a founder or a CEO, your brand's biggest economic loss might not come from your competitors. It might come from your own brain. Founders naturally project their own spectral weights onto their resource allocation.
They build what they value.
Right. They invest heavily in the dimensions they personally care about, rather than the dimensions their target cohort actually perceives and values. If you care deeply about the ideological dimension of your company, but your target buyer only cares about the experiential and economic dimensions, every dollar you spend on ideological signals is structural waste.
It just vanishes.
It is vanishing into the null space. Think about where your next dollar is going. Are you building a brand for your customer's geometry or your own?
If you arrived here without lecture one, the conceptual framework without the math, go back to L1 after this. If you want the accessible version of the metamerism result without the metric-based derivation, episode 3 covers the same insight for a non-technical audience.
Remember, that single number on your executive dashboard, it's just a shadow on the wall of an 8-dimensional room. It's time to turn on the lights.